Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Here's a sample of a free podcast from the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you through the door at postwrestlingcafe.com.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
And hello, everybody. The sky is blue. The sun is shining. It was looking dark, not just in the skies on Monday night, but rather in our hearts too, as the Blue Jays, trailing by two, going into the bottom of the seventh way, and then up to the plate comes the one-legged George Springer, just days removed from taking a fastball right to the knee. And with due respect to Kirk Gibson, the greatest postseason home run by a one-legged athlete in baseball history, as he sends that ball out of the Rogers Center. And thus, we go ahead 4-3. Jeff Hoffman to the mound. And we count down from six outs to zero. The Toronto Blue Jays, the American League champions, the World Series incumbents coming for the LA Dodgers. There are a few times in our life when pure bliss is achieved. But when that home run was hit, there was elation, way. Absolute elation.
From you, I was honestly surprised. I mean,
stood up, way. Everybody, I made a sound.
Everybody, I'm sure, in the city who was watching the game, who cared enough about this, was probably, you know, having a similar reaction. But I did not expect John Pollock, who was live tweeting this entire game on
live skying,
live skying, and like, I'm gonna put up on screen here a tweet that I don't think I've ever seen John Pollock tweet. Yes. What are there, like 15 this, S's here?
This is not a John Pollock tweet. This was not a stylistic hipster post. This was legitimately how I typed it and then saw it and said, F it. This is how it's going out, because that's how it was literally typed.
I swear, I've never seen you this excited about anything.
Wait, I was in the queue this morning. Okay. Well, my wife was in the queue on our behalf, looking at tickets, and it was tough. It was going to be a sizable investment. You could get tickets for, you know, several hundred bucks. You could go.
I've heard about $600 for 500 levels.
That's about what you're looking at. I actually could not go this particular weekend because I happened to be in a wedding party, but we were looking at game six and
cancel
seven
it.
Tickets.
Cancel it. You don't need that.
It's like, what
are you, best man? Who cares? Break it up.
You know, weddings happen every weekend, but how often does the Toronto Blue Jays make it to the World Series?
Like
the
once answer every 10 to 20 years.
Okay. That's the minimum.
Right. Yes. So, I'm happy for all of us, but I'm more so happy for you, because again, I am contrasting your enthusiasm for this compared to your complete pessimism for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I'm happy that
this is what the city is designed for. Okay. We perform on grass. Okay. We don't perform on ice. Okay. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., this guy, shows up at the Rogers Center hours before the biggest game of his goddamn life, and he's wearing an Austin Matthews jersey. Like, you could just walk under a ladder for all intents and purposes. This guy comes in, says, I don't give a fuck, okay? This is how much I believe in karma, okay? Because I'm going to wear the scarlet letter in this city. A team that is allergic to success. A team that has not had this level of stakes attached in it in a generation. And he walks in and says, I will wear the curse just to show everybody how confident I am. That's why this man was the MVP of the series.
Well, maybe he should keep it up and wear a Leafs jersey to every one of these games.
Yeah.
So first of all, thank you, everybody, for joining us a little bit later than usual. We made the executive decision on Sunday night that we were going to take Monday night off and we were going to instead watch.
Wasn't even we, okay? This was a way call, okay? And I was more than happy to go along with it, but this was your initiative, okay?
It was my call, certainly, but I also recognize that you weren't likely to maybe put up too much of a fight, you know? I mean, these sort of events don't happen too often in our lifetimes. And so Game 7, Monday, fuck it. Let's do this the day after, which we are doing right now.
The only counter argument toward that very good executive call that Wei initiated was that home run by George Springer occurred right at 10:30 p.m. And we would have got a great live reaction of the two of us because I'm sure we would have had the second screen going at this point.
I don't know if I would have, honestly. It's hard for me to concentrate.
I would have. I could do two things.
Well, I would be like scrambling to catch up to Raw, which I usually do by 10:30. So we'd be on have on one screen that home run, on the other screen, Jey Uso eliminating LA Knight and Jimmy Uso, which I would have reacted just as big for, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure there was that same level of reaction in Sacramento.
Yeah. So this is a free edition of our XL edition of the show. I mean, just, you know, because we're a little bit later, we wanted to give everybody a bit more of a extended bonus show. And also just for the ease of my editing afterwards, because I'm going live right after this at 3 p.m. Eastern with a new edition of the Wellness Policy. So we hope you guys stick around at youtube.com/postwrestling for that. But first, let's get into some news, John.
We will. We're going to start off with the passing of Bobby Horn, who was Mo from Men on a Mission and, you know, part of various incarnations of the tag team with Nelson Frazier, who was, you know, the late Nelson Frazier, who was, of course, Mabel / King Mabel. Bobby Horn had undergone a lot of health problems over the past number of years, but you know, he was someone that came up in the Carolinas independent scene in the early 90s and then kind of caught on with Memphis, and through USWA they were having their partnership with the WWF at that time, so they were able to get on the WWF's radar, and they came in. The Vault actually just posted one of their tryout matches from that period where they're working the different gimmick. But even in watching that, like, you can see them working the crowd and getting them like swinging the arms. And like, you could see, like, they were a very charismatic tag team that were, you know, knew like crowd work that was going to work for them. And then I guess they already had like Oscar in mind for some type of role. So they paired the three of them together. So Oscar becomes the third part of the act, and you get Men on a Mission, which is, you know, at this time period, like, we not too long ago watched the 93 Survivor Series. And like, a part of that show is the fact that you had what was like on paper a really excellent match with the Heavenly Bodies and the Rock and Roll Express, that if you're watching all these matches on mute, that's probably your best match on the show, and it dies, totally dies live. And then after that, we get this 4-on-4 elimination match where it features Mabel and Mo with the Bushwhackers as the four doinks. This was post-Matt Bourne, pre-Ray Apollo doink eras in the company. So we actually did not have the doink performer in this match, and it was, you know, with Bam Bam Bigelow, Bastion Booger, and the Head Shrinkers. And like, it's a dreadful match, but this crowd ate it up. And it's a perfect encapsulation of the time period in 1993 of what worked and what didn't work in front of what was a Boston crowd. But Men on a Mission, they would have one like just overnight run with the tag titles on a European tour. Then once they got into 1995. That's when they turned Mabel heel, and thus we got King Mabel and Sir Mo. And Mabel, you know, not exactly a spirited heel run, working with Kevin Nash for the WWF Championship and The Undertaker. And then by 96, they would exit the company. And that's really Mo's last national run. He would go back to Memphis and work in the USWA, and he hung around. Like, he would have spurts on the independent scenes. He ran a pair of companies, including a group in Texas alongside his wife Denise back in 2016. But a lot of the headlines involving Bobby Horne over the last decade involved, first, he needed a kidney transplant back in around 2018. And this was a notable story at the time because the cost of a kidney transplant was somewhere around $150,000. And in order to just get the procedure scheduled, he had to raise $30,000 of that amount. And he went to the WWE because, and I can't say for certain if they're still doing this in the TKO era, but definitely at this period, every year you would get a letter from WWE that if you were someone that was ever under contract with the company and you needed rehab, like drug rehab, alcohol, they would cover you for that rehab. And every year you got the letter. It was usually like Ann Russo that would send it out. And he went to the company stating, listen, I am not addicted to drugs. I don't have an alcohol problem, but I need this $30,000, which is, you know, in comparison to like some of like the rehab costs, going to be less. And it wasn't part of the company's policy. So he did not get the money. They did send him some merchandise to sell. But, you know, his argument at the time was like, if I was like hooked on drugs or alcohol, I'd be in a better spot than when I need this $30,000 for a kidney. So, I mean, it's the unfortunate realities of a lot of these performers that don't have any kind of health care or retirement benefits. And it's really left to the discretion of the company, which it's a noble act that they would cover those rehab costs. But it was also kind of cut and dry. Like, this is the area that we will assist you with. And when it comes to this, they weren't going to open up that avenue for others to need different health procedures like a transplant. So he went through that. He had a really bad case of COVID-19 a number of years back, and then had been battling pneumonia this year. He had been in hospital for the last 8 weeks. He had septic shock. His daughters were brought in to see him, and then, yeah, he just passed away a couple of days ago, 58 years of age. So, I mean, it's very unfortunate whenever you hear, like, just, like, this had to have been a nightmare the last 10 years of his life, and battling just problem after problem. So it's a very sad story of someone who was, if you were definitely, you know, the Men on a Mission era is going to be where he was most closely remembered among wrestling fans.
Yeah, 58 really is not old. I'm very sorry to hear that the past decade has been so awful for him. It's always sad to hear like people that you kind of grew up like feeling so like that new generation era. I think for a lot of people our age is like our prime era, you know. And even though it might not have been so great for business, anytime we go back to watch one of those shows, I'm always happy. And it's for like not even the big acts, but like the sort of mid card acts like Men on a Mission that comprise, I think, much of that nostalgia. And so I'm very sorry to hear about this, and you know, all the best to his friends and family.
We haven't spoken to everyone since Saturday night after WrestleDream. So Tony Khan did do his usual press conference after the fact. I guess the main news coming out of WrestleDream included, well, we had our usual referendum on AEW and its impact on the world at large. But also they had a ton of issues with Amazon Prime video purchasers. Neil Flanagan did a coverage of the press conference up on the site, and it said that when he was asked about the pay-per-view feed on Amazon Prime going out multiple times, including the main event, Khan confirmed that he had been aware of the situation. It was a technical problem with the Amazon delivery. Also likened it to the problems they had with Death Before Dishonor over the summer, which was the show that they ended up just putting free on YouTube for everybody. And it did have that incredible Bandido Hechicero match that everyone, you know, more people did get to see, but still coming at quite a cost for the company. And He noted that the replay would be available for subscribers, and since I don't own Amazon Prime, some of that's out of my control, which reads a little passive-aggressive. But, I mean, I would say if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, that's a frustration, especially if it's coming during the main event when you're spending that kind of money.
Yeah, and I suppose unlikely to own Amazon Prime.
I don't know, maybe.
Anytime soon.
Let's see.
I don't know if he's getting that one. I mean, there are a lot of things you can probably own. I don't know if Amazon anything is really. I'm sure he can hit up his friend Jeff if he is friends with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a whole lot else on this. I mean, he talked about, you know, Sting, this being, you know, showing up in the main event and, you know, having a big role for him on the show with Darby Allin. Bryan Danielson, it sounded like he had just booked the date off. It's not indicative of him being off pay-per-views, but was just not there. Kind of gave a storyline answer about him. It would be best for him not to be so close to Jon Moxley and Darby Allin during such a violent match. Although Danielson calling that match would have been it would have been interesting.
I think it would have been great. Yeah, and I'm sure there would have been some sort of tease. They would have probably come up with some way to eliminate him from the commentary desk, you know? That would have been interesting. But, I mean, we're also at this point now where, like, I mean, Danielson stepped away due to family commitments. And he's also now in a position where he's traveling every single week to these shows and potentially pay-per-views, meaning two travel days a week. So what exactly was he retiring for? I mean, other than, you know, to save the mileage on your body.
So So Brie and Brian, they have two children, and Brian is going now every week to these Dynamite tapings. Like, do you ever play the game way of like, how would I handle this schedule? I mean, if
I hope they have really good babysitters, you know, maybe people who can help. I mean, or just a really great schedule. I'm sure they do, but yeah, at this point, those kids are pretty used to travel. To their dad traveling or their mom traveling even.
And yeah, he talked about Takeshita winning the New Japan title and making it very clear that make no mistake, Takeshita is an AEW wrestler. He's an AEW guy and we're all really, really proud of him. And then put over St. Louis and Charlie Fez appearing at the show. But I guess that I think we all but set the stage for what was going to come after that main event on Saturday night. And lo and behold, it's only a question of who is going to be the one to be outraged. And if you took stock in Sarah, you would have been correct because the former trainer at AEW had put out her thoughts on this. Maybe you could pull up the exact comment, but it was to the I'll paraphrase here that it was, you know, who could put a stop to this? She says, you know who should stop this? Mothers with their remote control. This is worse than the plastic bag over the head. Kids are going to end up dead trying this stuff at home. So I thought we could go through all the headlines of the amount of attempts that have been made since Saturday because we have had 2.5 days since this incident occurred. We had a full day of school on Monday. How many copycats have we had of children dunking themselves in aquariums?
Well, nothing I've heard of.
Okay. Well, we can do an update on Wednesday. We can double check and cross reference. I don't mean to make light of this, but I think like there's a certain level of just criticism that you're always going to get with these types of matches. That's never some kind of standard across the board. My only question would be this is your line. Like this is the too far line and not anything prior. I mean, we have literally watched people if your concern is my child replicating this, we're talking about an industry that at its core is conflict solved through violence. So I think if that is our starting point and this is your end point, there is also lots in between that is also going to fall under this same criticism regardless of company. And I will grant you, AEW goes a lot further with their stunts than a WWE does, but a WWE is also not exempt from any of this. I don't know. Maybe we're giving way too much oxygen even to this comment. I don't know what level.
No, we're taking away oxygen. We're stuffing.
You're right. You're right. We're doing the opposite. We're giving life to this topic, but it's just one of those. Again, I argue that I think some of the staying power of these types of matches is this exact thing, is that there is some kind of pushback to it and it becomes a debate that outlives the actual match itself.
A match like this is created to elicit reactions like the one you got from Sarah Stock. First of all, I saw a lot of pushback for us even publishing this article, and I stand by like our Neil's.
Oh, that's
Neil's publishing
it's
of it.
It's a former trainer.
Primarily because it is a person who was formerly employed by this company. And
you don't like what she said. It's not our issue of like us posting it. Like, take your issue with the content of what is there, but us saying this is not of value to even talk about. I mean, that's ridiculous. I didn't see that, but.
Anyway, I also feel like if it's a Darby Allin or a John Moxley seeing this type of reaction, I don't know if they're unhappy about it. Like the goal of having this I Quit match that is, you know, designed for a pay-per-view attraction is so that these performers can push the boundaries as far as they could possibly take it. And of course, when you're going to do that, you're going to have many people who feel like they did cross that boundary. And reactions like this are almost like the perfect type of like publicity for an AEW pay-per-view to be able to say, pay for this thing. If you missed it, you missed something that outraged one of our former employees so much that she went on this Twitter rant and would go on to. She's the Gail Kim of this week, basically. Sarah Stock is.
To just like emphasize this point. I saw just as much about people complaining this match wasn't violent enough for right. the stakes that had been involved. So, I mean, I would not co-sign off of that either. I mean, I came off that show. I was almost surprised of how much I enjoyed this match. Because, again, these are not typically my flavor of matches. I will appreciate them when they're done well. But I genuinely thought this was really, really an effective match. And I was very high on it. So you can levy all your criticism towards me, WAI@postwrestling.com.
Ultimately, I feel like she's completely entitled to feeling the opinion. And I feel like there are probably a lot of people who share this similar sentiment. I mean, for many people, they draw the line between, you know, okay, clothesline, steel chair to the head, even they might draw the line between that and something like a plastic bag over the head or dunking somebody's head into an aquarium. It's going to be different for everybody. We all have our lines. Some people might not have lines, quite frankly. But I'll say I felt incredibly uncomfortable watching the scene. I mean, maybe discomfort to the point of just feeling like, I said it in the review, like there was a moment where I was watching this match where I felt like, am I enjoying this? You know, like, or am I just like watching at this point, like sort of gore porn, you know, that I just didn't really enjoy. And I kind of go back and I continue to ask those questions. So this is all to say, this is all part of the conversation that I think this match was designed to try to elicit. So we are taking part in that right now.
Yeah. I think there's natural pushback when we're going to the extreme of, you know, people mimicking this. It's like, at its core, you need to show me some evidence of this, okay? Where is this rash of AEW adolescent fans that have copied the paper bag or the plastic bag angle? It's like, yeah, this is like a concern. But it's completely unfounded. I mean, I could argue that about literally anything in wrestling that, yeah, someone impressionable could mimic, but I don't look at that as necessarily the prime concern of the author of that type of match or type of weapons used in wrestling.
So do you have a line, John, where you feel like something, you know, should
I think
be
it's ridiculous way because a child is just as likely to mimic a Superman punch because he sees Roman Reigns do it. And it's just like,
okay,
that to me is on.
Again, I'm to play Sarah Stock here. All right. You might not risk the injury as severe as, you know, a plastic bag over the head or, you know, somebody suffocating because they're dunking their friend's head inside a tank of water with a Superman punch.
Listen, if we heard all these stories about kids trying pile drivers on each other, kids trying GTSs on one another, or kids try, like, just, this isn't a real thing. It's just not a real thing. And I mean, it's, to me, I'm just, if your concern is children are going to be mimicking this, then shut the whole thing down. Like, I could make that argument about literally anything that we watch on this show. This is simulated violence. That's what professional wrestling is. That you try to have these performers orchestrated in a safe as way possible for them. But you, the consumer, I'm sorry that there is a certain level of responsibility you must take, whether it be as a teenager, as an adult, and if it's an adolescent child, then to have that guidance from a parent that can understand what they are watching, because that is what you are watching. This is not like we are luring you into a children's show and haha, we're going to sneak in violence. That is basically the core tenet of what professional wrestling is. It's storytelling,
conflict. Isn't that what she's saying? Mothers can stop this with their remote controls. She's basically just saying, hey, moms, if you, like, I don't like this, you should prevent your children from watching this as well.
Yes. If your eight-year-old child has somehow purchased a $40 pay-per-view and watched this stunt at midnight Eastern time, yes, you could turn the remote off of this pay-per-view that has a rating attached to it and a cost attached to it. You could turn your remote off.
There were children in the crowd. Darby was high-fiving a lot of these kids in attendance. So I'm sure there were children watching this.
And I'm sure that they will be digesting the
I don't disagree with the idea. I disagree with the idea that maybe kids are going to end up dead trying this stuff at home. But like, that really is ultimately up to your parenting. You know, make sure your kids aren't dunking each other's heads into aquariums and plastic bags, I suppose. And make sure that they're probably not watching this stuff if you don't want them to be influenced by this sort of thing.
I lived through as, like, in my teenage years, when it was the panic about the effect video games are going to have. And then it was like violent music that needs to have a warning label attached to it. And I'm just sorry, but like, if that's your crux for you acting out something, I find that to be a really weak template. If that's your defense, is that, well, these lyrics or this video game instructed me to do that. And that's a me thing. Not everyone's going to agree with that, but I just feel that that is, that is not to me a valid enough reason. That maybe give kids a grain of credit as well, that many people watching this, even at the age of like 12 years old, can also decipher this. Like, this is
what do you limit your kids from watching? I'm curious, if at all.
I mean, I am less concerned about like they're not drawn to any violent programming. So it's not a case of me having to stop them from watching anything like that. I'm more concerned, like, I don't let my daughter watch like regular YouTube. It's like, I'm like, we'll monitor like what she watches. It's more so like ads that I don't want her predisposed to. And
why?
I don't know what ads are going to be targeted at her. And I think on regular YouTube, I think there's just a much more dangerous way to like fall into an algorithm and what's going to be pumped out at her. And so that's
so the threat of like marketing is maybe
it is
even
and,
worse
and,
than,
and
than
I think there's enough of like what videos are going to get recommended to you that are maybe like you start on like just some, you know, some Bluey episode, and then it takes you down a rabbit hole, and what does it arrive at as well?
Well, what could it arrive at if I mean, all I'm saying is everybody has a line. Curious what yours is.
I don't know. I haven't experienced it yet. I don't view any of the programming that my kids watch voluntarily as anything that I am too concerned about. Like, they're not watching anything that is violent. But I'm also less, you know, if they come across like a movie that's going to have like language in it, I mean, I'm not too concerned about that. Like, at least for my older son who's eight, who's, you know, there's kids in his schoolyard that like openly swear and stuff. It's like he's more he is going to be witness to much worse, I think, during recess than he is going to of like what he's watching on like Netflix Kids, for instance. So I don't know. I'm not at the age yet now where I have to look at like, is this appropriate or not for him? Because I think all the things that he and my daughter watch is nothing that
you'd
is
be cool with him watching this match though, or no?
Oh, this match? No, I would not be. Yeah. Like that would be it. If he was interested in this, yeah, this would be one that I would probably, either sit down and explain with him, but I don't know if I would be comfortable with it. So that would be my prerogative. Yeah.
Okay. So you would stop with your remote control somebody from watching this match?
It would depend what his age is. At eight, probably not if he was looking to watch this. But again, I don't think this would be an option where he would be watching something like this on a pay-per-view by himself. Like that would, it would be something that, I mean, wouldn't even be, it's hard to say. Like he's not at that age yet where he even knows what professional wrestling is. And yeah, if it was the case and he was interested and wanted to watch this, I'd definitely be, if he really wanted to see it, it would be something I'd be definitely doing cautiously. And that's, mm-hmm. that is the role of any parent here. But I don't begrudge any company that is going to be executing this, whether it mm-hmm. is this or whether it is like WWE that's going to do a big weapons style match and there's going to be blunt objects struck on people's heads and stuff like that. Like that is part of, like, that is what this is, and you can't change what the content is that is being disseminated if your baseline is, well, we don't want to do anything that kids could mimic. That's just an unrealistic expectation.
Do they have ratings for AEW pay-per-views?
Like, I believe it's TV 14. I believe so.
Okay, yeah. So then it's clearly stated.
I don't have any issue with how this is marketed and sold on behalf of them, and mm-hmm. I think if you are if you were a regular watcher of AEW, I think even at like a young age, you knew what this match was being built up to and the kinds of stunts they were doing on television of what they were promising. Like this was going to be an exceptionally violent match. And mm-hmm. then you can decide, like if you have a young child and you know this is going to be super violent and you don't want them exposed to it, then you're not buying the pay-per-view. Case closed. Yeah. I don't think mm-hmm. you have to like be angry at AEW. Like what is your expectation level of a company to do this? Like when we are going to see a WWE match that is going to be bloody or the next Hell in a Cell match, I mean, you know what you're getting. It's going to be violent. There's going to be blood and there's probably going to be weapons involved. And these are all things that in theory, a child could be exposed to and could mimic, but none of that is borne out with any evidence. So I feel a lot of this is some degree of just,
well, ultimately,
criticism for a 24-hour cycle.
I think parenting is very incredibly difficult, and everybody kind of has their own method of and philosophies. And ultimately, though, I do feel like if you have concerns about this, curate your child's, you know, viewing, even up to the age of 14, if you really can. At this point, I imagine it to be very difficult, but always be aware of what they're watching if you have that concern. And knowing what AEW presents, and that, yeah, by this point you should be well aware of the type of matches that AEW presents, you know, for these sort of lights out style matches, well, exercise your own caution.
Yeah, this is coming from the guy who was able to rent Pulp Fiction when he was 10 years old. Is this a part where we alert people this wasn't even on our news list? Like we didn't even have this listed in advance.
It's part of the news. Sure.
All right, well, on that front, we're going to move on to just look at some of the lineups that are coming up over the next couple of nights. We have NXT this evening, which will have Leon Slater and Stax Lorenzo for the X Division Championship. And then a pair of number one contenders matches in the tournament for to determine the next contender for the men's speed title. So it will be Zachary Wentz against Jasper Troy and Axiom against Sean Legacy in 3-minute matches. OTM is back taking on Hank and Tank. And it wouldn't be a WWE week without a contract signing. The paper that will be signed by Ricky Saints and Trick Williams. Someone needs to do some stats on like contract signings by year. Like what is the number we get in each company over like the last 10 years? I would be so curious to know how many contract signings we get in a given year.
Maybe we should get a cagematch.net just for contract signings.
That's right. Yeah. Teaching young children penmanship at a discernible age. Maybe that's how Darby Moxley could have curbed some of this. They could have had a contract signing in advance.
We had plenty of pen stabbings during contract signings. I'm
that
sure.
happens too, especially mm-hmm. right to the hand. Dynamite is Wednesday night in San Antonio. Two title matches thus far with Kazuchika Okada against Bandido for the unified title and the Ops against the Hurt Syndicate for the Trios titles coming off of Wrestle Dream. And they've got some time now until Full Gear. They've got a full month.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. not available in all states or situations. The holidays are fast approaching, but why not get your shopping done early and actually enjoy it? Uncommon Goods makes your holiday shopping easy and fun with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. I found this super cool Starry Night Air Fort. It's basically a blow-up fort covered in glow-in-the-dark stars. You just hook it up to a box fan, and in less than a minute, you have this awesome little space for the kids to play, or even for grown-ups to sneak in and have fun. It's lightweight, easy to pack away, and really great for relaxing or imaginative play at home. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small businesses and artists, and with every purchase, they even give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. So shop early, have fun, and cross those names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Okay, all of your news can be found at postwrestling.com. While we were busy watching Game 7, John Clinchester grinding away, covering Raw from Sacramento, which is what we are going to be doing as we are going to be heading over to the Golden One Center in Sacramento. The last number from WrestleTix was 9,971. Their last time at the venue was April 14th of last year, 14,194. Now, it is worth noting that was the go-home Raw before WrestleMania weekend as well, but does give you just a sense of what can be filled in the building. So about 4,000 or so less. Alicia Taylor was off this week. Lillian Garcia is in, and Adam Pearce is introduced in the ring. The Vision pull up backstage, and it is Bron Breakker holding the World Heavyweight Championship as Heyman, Reed, and Breakker walk to the ring. Pearce knew that Rollins was injured against Cody Rhodes, but now we will not know just how badly because of what you guys did to him. Rollins has had major surgery, so confirmation that the surgery has occurred, and he is going to be gone for a while. The title is now vacant, and a new champion will be crowned at Saturday night's main event. Sacramento was not happy about this, and that CM Punk will face the winner of a battle royal tonight. And he has this long back and forth with Breakker to have the title handed over, and he is forced to say please, which Pierce begrudgingly does, and Braun hands the belt to Heyman, who must pass it over to Pierce. And Heyman asks why everyone is so mad at us. I watch Unreal. I know that we're the heels. And he says that I pulled off all of these moves because Braun is the future of WrestleMania and Bronson Reed is better than Reigns, while Rollins couldn't shoulder the responsibility. He's just a bum shoulder bitch.
BSB.
Yes. Get a whole merchandise line.
So was Heyman acknowledging that Rollins was already injured heading into Raw last night, and that was the justification for the Bronze attacking him? Or was, Pierce basically said that the Bronze were strictly being the ones responsible for the injury. So what
it's kind of weird, right? Like, you took it away that, like, the damage was largely credited to Cody in some ways.
Pierce credited it to the Bronze. And Heyman, though.
Well, he said Seth was already injured after Crown Jewel. But then they further injured him with the attack. So
gotcha.
That is
good. Okay.
And they're not even making it part of the coast-to-coast spot being how he injured himself. If anything, it was just like the wear and tear of the match with Cody that injured him without being specific. And then, Braun did finished him. So Rollins' spot has now been taken, and they welcome everyone to Raw. So a battle royal will headline the show with more to come involving the Vision. That is our setup way and the main event for Saturday night's main event, which is coming up in just under 2 weeks in Salt Lake City, where they're doing SmackDown and Saturday night's main event in the same venue in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, injuries like this are never a good thing, but I do think like the sort of unpredictability, especially when it's like, you know, something like a championship level sort of like story, the level of unpredictability that kind of like comes with these sort of like pivot types of moves can make the show a bit more exciting. And in this case, I thought like Bron Breakker stepping up here, holding the championship belt, I thought he gave off really good top guy energy. And I thought actually Adam Pearce did a really great job throughout this entire episode.
Yeah, I mean, he probably won't want this comparison, but he's really like invoking a lot of Vince in some of his overreactions and screams.
I don't disagree with the comparison. I'll say like, I think Pearce is charismatic enough to, you know, take up a lot of screen time, but I don't think he ever overshadows the talent the way maybe many prior, you know, GM figures may have.
Judgment Day is getting ready for all of their matches tonight. Dom enters and he's blamed for Balor and JD having to defend the titles tonight after the prompting of AJ Styles last week. And Dom just laughs off AJ because I've beaten him twice. Are you saying you guys can't even beat him once? And they walk off annoyed with Dom, and Roxanne Perez still standing by Dominic with some words of encouragement.
Yeah, they're very slow building that particular relationship. But
hey, Liv, just checking in.
Basically.
How's that shoulder? So it's Balor and JD defending the tag titles against AJ Styles and Dragon Lee, and they uttered off these stats of this illustrious tag title reign. Finn Balor and JD McDonagh have been champions for 111 days. This is their second title defense. Their first occurring back on July 28th, which somewhat begs the question of if Seth Rollins maybe could have just rode out this injury and come back on this type of a schedule. The only way to answer that is by fully acknowledging these tag titles mean nothing in comparison to the world title, which is a real championship in this company.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, even on the SmackDown side of things, I feel like it's these tag divisions just suddenly haven't really been featured so much. And I don't know if that'll really change, but clearly there's a preference for, you know, single storytelling rather than tags.
So Styles sends Lee to their corner to tag himself in, and JD pulls down the rope. AJ crashes to the floor. That sets up the commercial break. Lee is back in, double stomp on JD, and JD stops Lee with a counter into a powerbomb and hits a sling blade is hit to Styles, but then Lee is sent out of the ring. So Styles lands on the apron, hits the phenomenal forearm, and JD comes in for the big save, and crowd is red hot after that point. JD catches Styles with a standing Spanish fly, moonsault off the top, and a coup de grace. Now it's Lee making the save. Tope Suicida by Dragon Lee, and Balor attempts his own Styles clash. AJ counters it to hit the clash, pinning Balor. Massive pop for the title switch at 13 minutes and 21 seconds, ending the illustrious run of the Judgment Day as tag champions, and a great match to start off Raw.
A really, really strong match. Great near falls, incredible atmosphere achieved, and a really high pace finish with like one big move after another. I did not really expect the title change, but of course, you know, it makes complete sense in, you know, heating up the Balor and Dom feud. Curious to see if like AJ and Dragon Lee are going to be any more active as tag team champions, if the tag division itself will get any more focus as a result of this change, or if they're strictly there just to kind of, you know, create tension in the Dom Balor feud.
Well, they've got quite the list of challengers with the New Day.
The Viking Raiders, War Raiders, or is Eric injured right now?
No, he was just off on Monday. I don't think there's any injury there. So, okay. Yeah.
Well, two teams.
That's great. Jimmy Uso's in the locker room with Jay. Jay explains he was not mad at him last week. I was just mad at myself for making the same mistake I did in Paris. Jimmy tells him to stop being so concerned about Roman Reigns. The reason you lost your title was because you stopped believing in yourself. Jay says, you know what, Jimmy, you might be right, but Roman might be right too. So Jimmy is going into this battle royal on everyone, including you. And they shake on this, which was kind of perplexing because the whole story of the match is the fact that Jimmy's got Jay's back and is not going all in on him. And Jay does exactly what Jimmy said he was going to do. And Jay was the bad guy for this.
I think that's where we were supposed to feel like the sympathy.
I had no sympathy for Jimmy, if that's how I was supposed to feel.
Well, I mean, that even like saying we're going all in, or he's going all in, it's sort of, that is up for interpretation. You know, you can interpret it by saying, okay, we're going to take each other to the very end, and then it's everybody for themselves. That's how Jimmy maybe interpreted it.
They were in the final four together. I think that's as far as I would bring you a long way. And then if you turned your back, I would definitely take a cheap shot and eliminate you from behind.
Sure. Okay. But I mean, a line like this was definitely just kind of put in there just to, you know, give you that sort of moral dilemma that we were going to explore a little bit later on in the show.
Dominic and Rusev for the Intercontinental title. So Dominic just pretty much plays Eddie Guerrero as a cowardly heel, but he's a babyface to the audience because of the way he outsmarts his heel adversaries.
Which Eddie was.
Rusev. Yeah, it's just he's doing all these heel tactics, which are babyface tactics to the audience, and they're designed to be this way. This is not like the crowd is turning on things. Like, they are positioning Dominic in this specific role with to overcome the larger antagonist here. Dominic tries a 619, and it's cut off with a clothesline. And then Dominic, after being sent to the floor with a fall-away slam, comes back after the break, lands on the knees of Rusev with a frog splash, and it's Rusev taking over, stomps the back, and goes for the accolade, which Dom avoids, getting to the floor. And then Rusev goes after him, and Penta, poof, just appears at ringside. Rusev throws Dominic into Penta, and then Rusev attacks Penta. Dominic has snuck the hammer back into his boot, and Rusev stops the 619, takes out the hammer, and goes to use it. The referee takes the hammer. You know where this is going. The immediate concern of this referee is getting this hammer to safety at ringside, turning his back on the two participants that he has been tasked to adjudicate, and it results in a kick to Rusev's accolades, and then a 619 frog splash. Dominic wins in 9:18, and the crowd loves Dominic.
I thought it was a fun match. You know, it was just really Rusev beating him up and Dom managing to get the win through his very clever Eddie Guerrero style cheating. It's been really fun to watch Dominic in this tweener role right now, you know, where he just seems to be getting more and more red hot as a babyface, you know, throughout the country. And I think, you know, he's at the point now where he's just waiting, or the audience is waiting for that just one big moment to confirm his babyface status to this crowd. And again, I think all of that hinges on Liv Morgan's recovery process, whenever that'll be. But Dom, I think, continues to be like one of the hotter, you know, acts in the entire company, which I think positions him well for a Cena match coming up.
And then Penta returned and laid out Rusev with a springboard into a tornado DDT. So could see either those two being spun off or even the like three-way direction that they've kind of hinted at as well. But these three all being semi-attached in this IC title picture.
Yeah, I could see the three-way, but whatever the case, I mean, I think Penta is in a bit of a tough position here in that like the crowd still loves him. He looks cool. His entrance looks cool. But I don't think they like him more than Dom, you know? And so I wonder if in that one-on-one match scenario, how they'll sort of navigate that reaction, because it's not necessarily the best opponent for Penta.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, they're just going to wake up and realize we're not doing anything with Penta and we're not doing anything with Rey Fénix. Hey, wait a minute. I've got an idea.
No, truly. Well, you got Rey Fénix and he's going to do something with the Wyatts, it seems.
As I said, they're not doing anything with Rey Fénix.
Okay. So. Yeah.
And then we go into the crowd, and Nate Diaz is there in Sacramento. How the hell did they not interview this guy?
How did they not give us a Nate Diaz-Dominic Mysterio interaction? Because like, Dom has been doing his pose as his bicep flex,
oh,
right?
Oh, that's, yeah.
So
he retains the Intercontinental title. I'm not surprised, motherfucker.
I think the Diaz brothers have quite the ability to ask for, Nate, you know, has quite the ability to ask for some royalties, I bet.
Becky Lynch and Maxine Dupri rematch for the Intercontinental title, and they're in Maxine's hometown. Wade warned us he never won in his hometown, but different regime. So they also mentioned Maxine's parents were in the front row, though we never saw them.
Oh, just assume.
Maybe they just said it for effect because there was no way they were giving out front row tickets for storyline purposes.
Sure, yeah.
Maxine goes to the floor, comes back after break, and She does her comeback, which included a head kick on Becky, goes to the ankle lock. Becky transitions to an armbar, but Maxine flips out of the armbar back to the ankle lock, hits the high cross, and Becky rolls out, grabs her belt, and she's about to leave when she's stopped by Maxine, who returns her to the ring, sunset flip attempt, and the title is just laying there on the mat. This referee not as concerned about any foreign objects and taking them to safety, and Becky just gets frustrated, hits her with the belt for the DQ in 9 minutes and 43 seconds. Better officiating here than I saw on the UFC card in Vancouver on Saturday, so that's a positive here for the state of California. And we had a post-match beatdown with a manhandle slam by Becky. So how did you feel Maxine looked in this match?
First of all, unlike the Cody match on Friday, this was a scenario where I felt like the champion hitting the challenger.
Did the heel finish instead of the babyface doing the obvious heel finish?
Much better usage of that particular finish in this match, I felt. Yeah, that was a perplexing end to that Cody match, really. I thought in their third match together, I thought that the chemistry between these two continued to show like it's getting stronger. Like, to me, Maxine's offense does not look heavy. I don't think it'll ever look heavy. It simply doesn't look that great. But I think she's good and athletic enough to keep up with the pace required for like the sort of peaks and valleys of a match like this in front of this crowd. The crowd was really into this match. It was the right time for it, obviously. And I thought it was like, it's been a compelling little feud in these last couple matches that I'm even kind of curious to see a third between these two.
Fourth. Yeah, I think it really rests in like the audience getting into her comeback. And it's like, she does have an energy and a spirit behind them. Like, you can see, like, she is, I think, I give Maxine a lot of credit. Like, you see, she is training nonstop with like Natty and TJ in the dungeon. She's in an era though, where I think this woman would be so much further ahead just in the schedule of 5 years ago, where she'd be on the road and doing this match like twice a weekend with Becky and then bringing it to television. But that's not the era we're in. And you're really left to just, you know, it's just, there's one thing to train behind closed doors and another to be in front of 10,000 people. And that's sort of your learning curve for a woman who's got what, sub 50 matches in her whole life. You're just, this is their developmental system in some ways when you're on the main roster from the jump, because she barely was wrestling in NXT before getting the call up.
That sort of is the appeal of the character, though, isn't it? The fact that she's so inexperienced and, you know, like in some ways really shows it. And so that's why, like, when she's taken into deep waters with the Becky, it should be shocking. We should be a lot really excited. But I would also say, like, that'll start to continue to wear out, you know, as soon as we continue to see Maxine like this. So how can she continue to impress us despite us knowing what she's capable of now?
There was a recap of the Australia tour and the shows in Japan and an update on just a recap of Rhea Ripley breaking her nose at the first night at Sumo Hall here in this side-by-side with her dog.
She posted this, not me.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not way editorializing, yeah. So do not get on him for that. I mean, boy, she really broke this thing. I mean, look at it. She wasn't on the show tonight, but I don't know if she'll miss any time as a result of this. I mean, you can work around a broken nose, and she's in a pretty big program at the moment with Io and the Kabuki Warriors, although we'll get to the Kabuki Warriors in this very next segment.
We've seen plenty of people work with broken noses. It just means like she's going to have a cool new face mask for a few weeks. But yeah, no Kabuki Warriors either on the show, no Io Sky. And I guess we could assume because they worked over the weekend.
We did get the Kabuki Warriors in this video.
In a video, but not in attendance.
Yeah.
And we can assume that, you know, because they worked that Australia-Japan tour, that they're giving them some extra time off.
So, yeah, there was just a tape segment with Asuka and Kairi Sane. Asuka takes credit for ruining Rhea's trip back home, which I guess so. She didn't directly say, because the nose was actually in Japan. So it was after the trip.
They are, in storyline, crediting Asuka with the injury.
Yes. Yeah. So I broke your face, and Sane says, you have to pay for tearing our family apart. And Asuka says that Sane finally showed her what she was capable of. They need a new challenge and they need gold around their waist, putting the tag division on notice, which means Charlotte and Alexa Bliss and the Kabuki Warriors are back, which doubles the women's tag division.
It means Sol, Ruka and Zarya. Okay. The Secret Hervis, and I guess Raquel and Roxanne. So, you know, four. four teams.
That's a very loose tag division. I mean, this thing is just, and this is a one title division as well. Could you imagine if we had Raw and SmackDown women's tag belts?
Yeah. At this point, like I can certainly see them beating Charlotte and Alexa for these championships because they are way more interesting than
Charlotte
and Alexa.
These two feuding with Rhea and Io over those tag belts, I mean, it really does elevate those tag titles. Like, this is a way bigger storyline than anything going on in this women's tag division for years.
100%, yes.
Heyman is outside Adam Pearce's office door. Apparently, he's been waiting for 45 minutes. And Pearce comes out to inform him that Breaker and Bronson Reed are out of the Battle Royal. And he will put them back in if Heyman says please. So Heyman reluctantly begs. By saying please, Pierce still turns him down, which to me just took out so much interest in this battle royal by taking two favorites of like a lineup that at best you had three people that I think you could viably believe would win this thing. So that was kind of some air out of the sails of this.
Well, it's true, but clearly they also didn't want to beat Bronson or Breaker. Oh,
that's obviously the reason, but I think it was, I feel like we could we have come up with something a little better than, well, he made me say please earlier and fuck these guys.
We maybe could have, I suppose. But this was also like, you know, their way of, I guess, like showing that Pierce has a bit of a backbone. And I find that characterization pretty interesting in that, like, again, he's not just
maybe,
like,
maybe they're going to take out Pierce. Maybe that's going to be their revenge next week.
They could, yeah. But he's not shown to be any sort of like pushover GM. He nor Nick Aldis like are still very authoritative figures that command a level of respect. But again, I also don't think they ever overshadow the talent. You know, in this case, it was like more so Pierce getting one up on Paul Heyman rather than, you know, Braun or Bronson.
And Paul is left alone. And behind him is Becky Lynch, who approaches Paul. And Heyman was great here. He just squirms and he is just backtracking. I had no choice. Breaker and Reed conspired against Seth and I tried to physically get between them. I had no choice. And now, Becky, you are the breadwinner and I have to feed my children. And we both know as parents that the rule of surviving is just survive today. Which is always, this was always Paul's analogy when it came to how he had to lie and cheat to keep ECW. It was all about survive today and then figure out tomorrow's problems then. So he says, there is a vision and that includes you. And Becky leans in, calling him a penguin-faced prick, meaning she is still following Braun Strowman on X.
Oh, was that Braun Strowman's line?
He called him what was it? Penguin's real name, Oswald Copperpot. Was that the name he gave him? I'm not up on my Penguin real names and such, but that was what he called him last week. And his snake oil salesman crap doesn't work on her. I never liked you, never trusted you, but neither did my husband. He didn't need you. He used you. He knew you would turn on him. He was only surprised it took so long. But when he comes back, you don't have to worry. He's not coming for you, but he's going to kill all the people you love. Kill Paul. Volumes 1 and 2 coming in 2026. And he's not going to kill you, Paul. You're just going to wish that he had. So this is really weird because this completely baby-faced Becky in this whole thing, which I imagine this is just going to be a non sequitur to all of her storylines, but this at least distances her now from the vision until Seth comes back.
Well, we knew this was going to be a difficult position for Becky Lynch to be put in as soon as the injury happened and they broke Seth out of the group, right? I mean, she's a heel on her own and she somehow has to make an exit from this group while vowing revenge for her husband and while still trying to retain her image as a heel going up against people like Maxine Dupri. And I thought, she and whoever helped contribute to this segment did about as great of a job as I think you could expect from somebody in this very tough situation. She, to me, was able to retain her heelish edge by giving Heyman this sort of mob boss-like threat. She was able to protect her husband's image and essentially kind of cut a promo on his behalf, vowing revenge, and not just vowing revenge on Heyman, but like, it's one thing to vow revenge on you, but when you're threatening the people I love, that's even worse. So I thought Becky was great here, and I still felt like it ultimately served as a great way to, again, tie up a loose end for Becky Lynch, but also build interest to a future Rollins Vision confrontation without Rollins actually being there. So I thought they both did really great here.
I mean, it's always the silver lining of a big injury is that you can make the comeback feel huge, which I think is a bit of our frustration with the Eddie Kingston return. But with Seth, I mean, I do not imagine him being a surprise appearance coming back to face Big Bill or working with Hook on prelim shows.
No. And at this point, that seems like it'll be quite a while from now. And whenever that happens, I think Becky might be on her way back to being a babyface by then. You can kind of make sense of all that.
Yeah. But I thought they balanced this well. Like, you came out of this segment knowing like where things are, like you had to address Becky in some form or fashion, but mm-hmm. you come out of this and it was not as though you feel Becky is like reverting back to a babyface, but she is mm-hmm. at odds with this vision, obviously, as anyone would naturally assume it to be without kind of compromising the role she is in now.
Totally. So, yeah.
A good segment to address all this.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Stephanie Baker, Roxanne Perez, non-title. The Devil's Kiss is the whole focus of this. So
explain this match to me, because last week we had that interaction between Stephanie and Roxanne, where like essentially, Vicar basically gave her a title match, didn't she? And Roxanne was like, on my own time, and we're like, what? Why on your own time? You just lost the match prior to this, and so
this match wasn't Roxanne's time. She wanted a warm up first before she executes her title match. She's not owed, but will take.
Well, I don't think she's getting a title match after this one. She loses this.
Oh, I thought match. The opposite. I thought this guarantees the title match now next week. Right. This is the logic you're following, okay?
Clearly. Like, okay.
So, Roxanne Perez is now equaling LA Knight's number of matches this year. Our Iron People are at 41 matches apiece.
A lot of matches.
Yeah. Yes. That's like a
41. Okay. Yes.
So Tiffany Stratton has a lot of title defenses to catch up to, but we've still got two months and change.
By today's standard, yeah. Not quite, I guess, the what's the Hulk Hogan record?
Of title 400, defenses?
400 matches in a year?
Well, yeah, you would have thought they could have padded their stats over the weekend with going to Japan, where the dateline, you get extra days out of the year.
Yeah, that's the Hogan math.
Yeah. I'm going to miss the Hogan math. So, yeah, the match, a lot of it was just built around getting to the Devil's Kiss, which is kind of all Stephanie Vaquer matches now. She used the dragon screw while Perez is working on the arm feverishly, tried for the hit the La Mystica into the cartwheel knee strike, and then Pop Rocks is avoided. Vaquer hits a 619 but gets distracted by Raquel, so Perez goes back to the arm. Perez is knocked to the floor. There's a high cross by Vaquer to both, and then hits what is described as the angel's wings, but ends with like, it's the double underhook into like a pair of knees that she drops Perez on.
Yeah, it's just the name, the Angel's Wings, not the Chris Daniels.
It's really not the move, but it's just the name that I guess Michael Cole really, or whoever, really liked this term.
Sounds
after
cool.
They had used it over the last week or
How
so.
How about the Devil's Wings? No, I guess. That Devil's Horns? No. No, not that great.
The Devil's Pissed. I don't know. I was trying to go for something there, but naming is not my specialty. So 12 minutes. Vaquer wins. Perez, instant number one contender, and gets beaten down. It's 2-on-1, and who is going to come to Stephanie Vaquer's savior? It's the one and only
Stephanie Vaquer, right?
Nikki Bella is back, runs out, and just gets destroyed by this big boot by Raquel. So she's laid out, and then poor Stephanie Vaquer goes for this springboard and just wipes out and comes down. They have to do an audible here. So she DDTs Raquel, and man, she is limping on this knee. Hopefully she was okay after this. She just hugs, embraces Nikki as this women's tag division is just growing. But yeah, this was a rough springboard spot by Vaquer in the aftermath.
Yeah, I really hope she's okay. You never really know, like, you know, the severity of certain injuries. But thankfully she did do this post-match angle, so we could assume that she's all right. I always enjoy the matches that these two have. I mean, Vaquer and Roxanne are just two of the individuals who have kind of really bolstered this already really strong division on Raw. And every time like either of them are involved in a match on the show, it tends to be one of the highlights. This is really no different. I was surprised by the outcome though, because again, like, I really think, I don't know, like, I know Roxanne is sort of the fault, like, the she's the shorter one, she's the person who takes all the pinfalls in the Judgment Day tag team, but I really think that they could stand to protect her a little bit more, because she should be pushed, I think, harder than, or at least protected a bit more than I think how they're treating her.
The women's tag division continues as Adam Pearce is with Lyra Valkyria. Bayley walks in. Bayley says she has not slept since last week, and she has a surprise for Lyra's birthday next week. And Lyra, can't you just tell me? Oh, that was it. That was their whole role on the show. I've got a surprise for you next week.
Yeah, not enough time on this one.
Yeah, they couldn't fit it in. Breaker and Reed are upset with Heyman. Why are we not in this battle royal? Heyman does a whole history lesson explaining how Brock's rise, he could have just won the title instantly in 2002, but through listening to Heyman, he waited, faced The Rock at SummerSlam, and became champion. Then he mentioned CM Punk in 2012, who they were ready to toss out the door after 100 days with the title. Maybe need some more context. And then spoke about Reigns' title reign, and it's not about dominating people. It's about the backstage politics. You're the future. And he walks off, and Braun just looks at Bronson and says, "We've got a lot to learn."
Yeah. I mean, I felt like this scene was interesting, especially those lines, because, like, you know, you're protecting Braun and Bronson, but here you were basically showing that they were puppets
for the Putty Patrol.
Yeah, they're like the puppets for Paul Heyman. And obviously I feel like that's intentional, because, you know, in all of this, the feud is not really just between Heyman and Bron Breakker. Seth Rollins and Bron Breakker. It's a feud between Seth Rollins and Paul Heyman. And I felt this scene like this basically spelled out to you that the true puppet master behind all of this was Paul Heyman. And contrasting like this, in addition to the scene we got with Becky, I mean, just continues to show that, you know, Paul Heyman is the type of character who could basically sweet talk his way out of any situation.
Just survive today.
That's it. Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the battle royal, which got a lot of time.
Oh, we got Nikki and Steph in the back, of course. Their little interaction.
I'm sorry, I missed this. Anything notable?
Oh, you missed this entirely?
I missed this segment entirely. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. How could you? This is our new favorite tag team here. So Stephanie Vaquer thanks Nikki Bella for having her back. Nikki says she's very proud of her and that there's nobody like her. And Nikki says, as a champion myself, I think she meant former champion. She says, everybody around you changes and anybody can take you out. And she says, I wish somebody watched over me when I was in your position that you're in right now. Don't worry, I have your back. And so Stephanie says, you have my back, so I have yours.
Wait. Nikki's saying, I wish someone had my back when I was champion?
Or somebody was able to, like a former champion was able to watch over me.
Like she so literally not her sister. Had like her sister, like having her back the whole time.
Well, yeah, again, not a former champion.
I guess, besides their feud.
Yeah, so this very clearly to me spelled out a tease of a Nikki heel turn and a future Stephanie versus Nikki match, which is the likely such a destination out of all of this. And it all
I hope she goes back to the old pronunciation when she turns on her.
She has to. So I think it's a good direction if you're going to continue to use Nikki Bella. I mean, this is an association that they've teased since she made that flub with calling her name. And I think like Nikki's sort of natural tendency is to come across kind of disingenuous in these sort of interactions. It's just the way she speaks, you know, and they're now using it to build to, I think, what will be an effective heel turn, whatever it comes, which should be beneficial for Stephanie Vaquer's babyface run.
And then we go to the Battle Royal that featured CM Punk out on commentary. I thought he was very good on commentary here. He was trying to give, he was trying to get as many people over as he could and putting them over as threats. We got a reference comparing Wade Barrett to Lord James Blears, which was hysterical to hear from Punk. I thought, if anything, he would make some jab about comparing to Harley Race after the Ace Steel comment over the weekend. I thought I was listening for it. I was so ready to hear just an ounce of petty Punk come out in this, but I did not hear that. So we have the Usos, Sheamus, who we have not seen since Clash in Paris, AJ Styles, LA Knight, Grande Americano, Dominic Mysterio, Kofi Kingston, Grayson Waller, Penta, Ivar of the War Raiders, but not Eric, Akira Tozawa, Otis, Finn Balor, JD McDonough, Rusev, and Dragon Lee. Punk at the beginning is picking LA Knight to win. I would say like your believable challenges here. We're probably down to what? LA Knight, Jey Uso, maybe an AJ Styles and Otis.
I wouldn't even say AJ, but yeah.
Then you had two realistic people to expect here. So Rusev eliminates Otis first, then Tozawa. JD and Balor would eliminate Dragon Lee after he's going for a springboard. We're just going fast and furious here with eliminations. El Grande Americano loads up the mask, but after a 1D from the Usos, he's tossed out. Sheamus would eliminate JD, then hits the 10 beat, sending Balor out, and Kofi comes up from behind, dumps Sheamus out, and Sheamus attacks the Judgment Day, prompting all of the referees to run over and check on Sheamus, and AJ eliminates Dominic, and we do the Steve Austin spot, where no referee is there to see him eliminated, so Dominic sneaks back in. Punk at one point just mocked LA Knight for going for a submission hold during a battle royal, and then Jimmy saves Jay on two separate occasions. There is a phenomenal forearm that is caught with two super kicks from the Usos, and Jimmy sends out AJ, leaving us to the Usos, LA Knight, and Dominic, and Jimmy and LA are fighting against the rope when Jay comes up from behind, sends both over, and Jimmy, who is playing the Sid Justice role here to Jay's Hulk Hogan, cannot believe it. And then backdrops Dom out, and Jay's your winner in 18 minutes and 50 seconds, ending the show with a face-off with CM Punk, which is our match for November 1st, Saturday night's main event, to crown the new champion.
With Jimmy standing in the middle. So I thought, like, the finish presented like a really nice sort of bit of tension between Jimmy and Jay, and again, posing a bit of a sort of ethical dilemma. You had Jimmy say, hey, it's everybody for themselves in the back, only to help his brother and then get turned on his brother. So plenty of people, I'm sure, feeling sympathy for Jey Uso in making his decision. But at the same time, bit of a dick move, right? So it draws some, I think, very clear, lines between the two that is sure to be furthered in this world title match. And Jay versus Punk, I feel like, is a pretty decent, attractive singles match for a Saturday night's main event. You're promising a new champion crown, and I think, to me, the odds are in favor of CM Punk being a champion on the show, which I think might probably, make the match feel a bit bigger than typical. So any thoughts, John, on who you think might be winning?
I think that you, at this point in time, like you have to imagine that like Punk is probably the stronger play of what you're going with. I wouldn't be opposed to them going with Jay. I mean, it's kind of, you know, he's probably going to be a big figure in the construction of War Games, which I don't know how much this is all going to like. The Seth stuff just feels like a house of cards that is going to cause all these different plans to change. I guess Punk would be a, you know, a safe bet of someone to go with. And you do kind of have the story, this like overarching Seth story that's probably going to be shelved for a while, that, hey, Seth is gone, and now finally this guy gets a chance with the title, but you keep it lingering. Like, Seth would never let this guy be champion, but now it's out of his control.
Yeah, I just see it, Braun having the championship probably sooner than later, and I think beating Punk for it probably makes the most sense. Jay is just so tied up with this whole Jimmy Uso storyline right now, and the story is that Jay isn't necessarily, you know, he doesn't really know himself. He's kind of caught confused between whether or not he should be more Roman Reigns or if he should be more himself. And I think that'll ultimately cost him. Obviously, Jimmy Uso himself might turn on Jay and cost his brother the match here. So I feel like he's just too tied up in all of that stuff to actually win. Meanwhile, I can see, you know, Punk maybe having another short reign before Ron Breaker
takes it away from him. How about this idea? I think this could be really cool if they did it well, is Saturday night's main event. We get down the stretch. Jay has gotten multiple near falls, can't keep Punk down. The ref is distracted and Jay gets the belt and he has a crisis of conscience and he stares at the title. Do you think that could be a real, could that emphasize the conflict within him where he has to stare at the title? Do I do it or do I not?
Well, it's never been done before in professional wrestling.
This would be novel. Yeah. It would be something different.
I don't know if it'll work or not, but something tells me that it may. Yes.
So that was Raw. I thought a really great tag title match where we got AJ Lee as our new tag champions, although apparently rejecting that particular moniker. They don't want to be known as AJ Lee.
So what are they, AJ and Dragon?
They should be AJ and Lee.
AJ and Lee. That's how I write it in my notes, just to make sure I can distinguish between.
Maybe Alan would be more open to it. Maybe if they create a trios division and they add a Jay Uso to the mix.
Oh, maybe he could just go by Alan. Alan Lee.
Alan Lee. Okay.
Yeah.
All possible.
No. I thought it was an easy watch, you know, like it was eventful in that, like, you got the Seth Rollins title stripping announcement. I thought they sort of laid the foundation of Braun Breaker, like, being the guy, you know, decently well. I thought they tied up the Becky loose end pretty well, and they gave you the main event for Saturday night's main event with the promise of a new champion towards the end. I found it to be a pretty easy watch, especially the day after.
Yeah, I think we can look at, we got this match locked in for Saturday night's main event, and presumably Cody and Drew, maybe with some type of stipulation, as probably your core matches for Saturday night's main event.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, are you aware that if possible, that would be going against Game 7?
Yeah, I am aware.
So I am saying preemptively that if that is the case, Saturday night's main event equals Sunday morning main event review. Okay.
Yeah. Well, game one is on Friday, which is the start of the world. Well, SmackDown. It's going head to head with SmackDown. You are not on that show, but I will fulfill my duty here. Okay. As somebody who takes my job way too seriously. All right. And I will be here with Neil Flanagan. John had preemptively predicted that the World Series game one would start. No, he booked this day off because you're doing something else. You're at a wedding.
It's not my wedding, but the wedding that I'm obligated with. So I've got a pretty busy weekend with all of that going on. But what's your thought? Game one and two. I'm hoping for a split. Like, if Toronto can leave here with one win, I'm happy. I'm hoping, like, down 2-0. I know that we lost the first two to Seattle. I don't want us to be down 2-0 here. This is going to be a mammoth undertaking against this Dodgers team, man.
They're the defending champions, and they're coming off of a 4-game sweep.
They've lost one game in the postseason so far.
Wow, that's crazy.
Okay, this is a monster.
Well, that last game was basically Shohei Ohtani beating the Brewers by himself.
Yes,
pitching and hitting two home runs. Yeah, in the game.
Was it
three? How many home runs?
I can't remember what the number was. I was not watching that particular game.
Holy shit! It was like, yeah. It's talk about like a. like an underdog sort of story. Like that's how it comes across to me, of course.
Do you know what this wild stat was?
Three home runs. And he pitched the game.
Oh yeah, they're calling it one of the greatest performances like in a game, and it, like that's
unbelievable.
Amazing. The stat was that I don't know if it's just in Major League Baseball postseason, but the team that wins the first two games wins 89% of the time. That's what we were up against last night. We had 11% by prior history to win that. So anyway, I'm hoping for a split. That's my hope, okay?
Well, like I'm assuming you'll be like everybody will be streaming the game at this wedding.
So it's actually a morning wedding on Saturday.
And what? You're good.
Yeah,
then.
I'm actually
perfect.
I'm going to be okay for Saturday night to watch this game, yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. Oh, well, Friday, I meant.
Friday, I have like obligations with like the groom because I am the best man. But I'm gonna by hook or crook find a way to watch this game on Friday night.
Oh,
so
that's incredible.
Remains to be seen how I naturally navigate all this because I really want to see this game on Friday. So anyway, that is coming up this weekend, and
we got some feedback here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Always forget this.
How could you forget? This is the XL edition available for free for everybody on this particular day. If you guys enjoy these sort of extended conversations, including the one we had earlier at the start of the show, you can join us at postwrestlingcafe.com, where for $6 a month, you get all of our bonus shows, including, well, the latest edition of Rewind Away and all this other stuff that you can see on the screen that I don't necessarily need to go through right now. But in addition to all of that, we get to hear from you guys at forum.postwrestling.com at the end of all of these XL editions with your thoughts on everything going on in pro wrestling.
On the Post Wrestling Cafe this month, John Pollock and Wei Ting sit down for a new edition of Talk. We are also going back to 1992 to look at the G1 climax from that year. Rich Van and W.H. Park are getting together to review Peacemaker Season 2 and look at Marvel Zombies. Plus, we have Book Club detailing Kamala Harris's new release, 107 Days, weekly editions of Collision Course, and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. All can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com. We'll start with Brian from New Jersey. Pretty solid Raw, enhanced by the live crowd. I like to follow up to last week's angle. I enjoyed the tag title match with what I thought was a surprising title change. Dominik and Rusev 2 and Vicar Perez. Solid Battle Royal, continuing the Usos story. Any reason why Xavier Wood and Eric were absent from the Battle Royal while their tag team partners made it? My understanding is they were just off on Monday. This was not like a injury-related issue that they had.
They probably realized
Woods even posted like a video of it. I think he's just he's on a vacation or something like that. So I don't think there's anything more to it than that.
Okay. Let's go to Andy B, who says, congrats to you guys on making it to the World Series. Yeah, we worked really hard.
We did it.
We deserved it.
You know, going back to March, like that's when we really put in the work.
That's right. Yes. You can't let the Dodgers win. We'll try our best. Todd Bowley can't win with his other teams while running Chelsea FC into the ground. Who is this? I don't know who this is.
I don't know, but we agree.
All right. Is it the medium-term direction Braun taking the belt off Punk? I'm not sure about Braun leading the show as the heel on top of the division. He isn't ratted enough for it, and I personally don't enjoy Heyman's promos at this point either. I feel he'd be better served as a babyface kicking ass and having a cathartic title win. The Batista template of him turning on the freaking gang was the right one for me, even if it made for some drab television in the build-up to the big angle. The other suggested direction could be Jay turning heel and winning the belt en route to a match with Reigns at Mania. Considering how SummerSlam 23 turned out, not sure I'd be clamoring for this possibility.
I mean, the argument is always like that someone is like not ready for this. It's like, I could have made that argument towards Lesnar in 2002. I could have made that argument about Batista in 2005. There's aspects of everyone's, there's very few that are just, they're so polished that by the time you're ready to put the title on them, they're ready at every, like, again, go back to 2012 and how much panic there was when they took the belt off Tanahashi for Okada. And that's a ridiculous comparison, but that's sort of the mindset. I always believe that sometimes when you see a guy that checks off enough boxes, you put them in the big position and they sink or swim. And sometimes they will elevate themselves because of the position that they're being put up to. I would be very high on Braun Breaker, but I'm not saying he needs to have the belt tomorrow either. You know, it's something you can build toward. I'm not the biggest fan of just put a belt on someone and then flip it within a month either to Braun Breaker. Like, this is sort of, all the focus will be on Survivor Series. And then it's kind of a lull until you get to like Rumble season, and that's the end of January. So I don't think you need to be necessarily just getting the belt onto Bron Breakker in some record setting fashion either.
Yeah, you don't.
Those guys have to be the top heels, like in this whole show. Like, they are the focal point with Seth gone.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't know at this point, like, how long Rollins will be out via injury. But I mean, the destination is for Rollins and Breakker, and Breakker being the champion with Rollins trying to claim the championship back just feels like it's, I mean, that is the story, right? So that'll probably be a long time from now. But still, the ultimate destination I see this is Breakker taking the belt off of Punk and facing Seth Rollins eventually. And I also don't think, yes, okay, Bron Breakker might not be the best promo at this moment, but he has the best promo attached to him. And I think that's more than enough to, you know, to justify the storytelling and to like give people the perception that Bron Breakker is a very tip top guy on top of this show. So I think he's ready already in that sense. Let's go to a super chat here from Jake from the Windy City. Thank you, Jake, for sending us $5 of support. Rare that we do these live shows. So thank you for your super chat support here. Really eventful week in sports this week. Jays win last night and the NBA returning to NBC tonight. Round ball rock on repeat. Classic.
John Tesh, the best.
Yeah.
All right, we go to Mike. I'm not sure what the reason is behind making Maxine try to look good. No matter how much training she does, she is not going to get much better. Is that no matter how much training she does, she'll never get better? I mean, in theory, that's not typically the case.
She will get better according to her standards. She will never be Asuka or Io Sky, okay? Not in our lifetimes, but...
To be quite honest, she is in the company where she does not need to be at that high of a level. Like, in terms of like what is going to be acceptable as perfectly fine, I mean, this is the company for that standard.
It's not even just.
I don't mean that as a slight, but it's like you don't have to be, Saray to excel in this company.
Yeah, you do have to reach a level of sort of like competence, which I think she has achieved. She's shown, at least with Becky, that she's able to provide that. And I think, again, like, she's the type of character where like not being the best is the character. It is something that sort of suits her. And as long as you have somebody who's interesting enough to be able to tell a story and to create a compelling match with, like she has done, then that's all you really need. So she, I think, is like the reason why they're trying to make her look good. Number one, okay, they're in Sacramento, kind of makes sense to, you know, have a hometown person in the match, but also because you can build a compelling story with somebody who's a fish out of water, who shouldn't be there, with somebody like Becky Lynch doing a lot better than we all expected.
Okay. You continue here? Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Jurassic Park fan who says, I hope you're both doing well. First, do you guys know when you'll be doing MCU later of Marvel Zombies? That's a great question. The answer is next week, next Wednesday, the 29th, October the 29th, where Rich and WH will be right ahead of Halloween talking about Marvel Zombies, the animated series from Disney. So look for that in the Post Wrestling Cafe feed. I maybe we got our dates crossed here, but I'll continue to remind them that it's actually next Wednesday. Regarding Raw, it was a generally fun and enjoyable show with a standout tag championship match and another good performance for Maxine, but with a predictable DQ finish in her match with Becky that I just figured would happen going in after their last match ended in a no countout, plus solid forwarding of storylines, including Jay, Jimmy, Roman. I'm also guessing Nikki Bella has been hanging around backstage in Raw just waiting for Bakir to get attacked so she can save her. Perhaps Nikki later turns on Stephanie when she least expects it. Question. I'm spitballing, but what do you think about Punk antagonizing Jimmy, which plays on Jimmy's mind? Meanwhile, okay, this is a very, really long question here, so I'm not even really sure what the question is. Punk antagonizing Jimmy. Sorry. Jimmy's... This is way too long. Way too long. Jurassic Park 10.
Sorry. We got to wind down.
Let's move on.
Okay, Jeremy from Texas. I liked how they had Becky confront Heyman. It was a loose end they addressed and didn't let it linger. I thought for sure we would get some kind of a run-in with Braun wrecking the Battle Royal, but didn't happen. The Bronze could wreck the title match at Saturday night's main event and set up War Games. Would it be a bit over the top for the person who gets the deciding fall at War Games to become the new champion? I'm not crazy about that idea. And then also throws out the idea of a tournament. To be quite honest, I mean, I don't know if they're thinking at this level, but this is going to be, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first Saturday night's main. That is exclusive on Peacock. I think doing like a screwy finish on your first one, it really does kind of tier this as though this is like, this is really just a setup. And granted, that's what Saturday night's main event is. But on this show where you are off broadcast television, I think you promise this for 2 weeks, you give people the outcome. Like that is the one promise you are going into this show with that makes it worth your time coming out of it, is that you get a resolution to this title picture. And I do not think that War Games needs it. Like that, you're talking about a show that has 30,000 tickets out. It's got the War Games concept. I don't know if like the vacant title is that much more of a hook for a show that, you know, with the War Games theme has really rehabilitated itself over these last years.
Yeah. Saturday night's main event, like traditionally has been just not even a B-level show. It's your setup to often a B-level show. Right. But I would argue that like it takes on a completely different purpose at this point, being the primary reason why a WWE fan would be subscribed to Peacock. So I think there's a lot more importance for it, or at least there's a much bigger need for the shows to feel relevant and important to justify that. And I mean, you're obviously getting that with John Cena's last match taking place on Peacock exclusively. And I think they'll continue to, well, for this first one, make it feel just as important with potentially a CM Punk World Championship win. Wanted to thank the other Kevin for gifting a post-wrestling membership here on our YouTube channel. Thank you very much, other Kevin, for that. If you guys wanted to gift a membership on our Patreon, you can always go to, just as a reminder, postwrestling.com/gift.
And we'll do one more here. Jermaine from Chicago. Raw was a good show. Hopefully AJ Styles and Dragon Lee can defend the belts more and make them relevant. I have a couple of questions. I think Gunther should return on SmackDown as they could use him as a top heel for Cody. Is that a good ideal? Well, it's a good idea. But it also is a fair ideal as well. Have you ever seen someone out as long as Bianca for a hand injury? Did she have to get the hand totally replaced? When do y'all expect her back? Thanks for having a DCU later. I feel like I asked for that show years ago. I mean, the problem with Bianca is just like it involves like the knuckle, and it just sounds like it's in such a position that if she were to come back early, it is in risk of re-breaking itself and she's back to square one. Like it sounds like it's just a totally freakish injury that is pretty rare that we have seen anyone have this level of complication towards, a finger break, but like affecting the knuckle as well. And just the fact that she has been out now since WrestleMania. So we're talking mid-April when she last wrestled. Gunther coming back. I mean, all indications, again, unless things have like drastically changed, all things pointed towards Gunther being the Cena opponent for December. So I'd see that being probably Gunther's return, unless they have a change of heart. I think Cody is tied up with Drew. And I think if anything, it's like it's Randy that feels is more on the periphery. I'm not too concerned about Cody having opponents, but you could get to Gunther, but I don't think it needs to be immediate.
I think an interesting question is, does Gunther beat Cena? And if he does, or what doesn't do even, what do you do with him? I mean, I can certainly see Cena wanting to lose on his way out, and I would argue that that should be the case. Losing to Gunther, you have Gunther being red hot as the person who both retired Bill Goldberg and John Cena in the same year. Well, that seems to prime him up perfectly for a world championship contendership, right? Or at least something to that extent. And I think a Cody destination for Mania feels very possible, even likely.
Like in theory, you have Brock and Gunther getting these big wins over Cena, and what the follow up is with them. All right, thanks Jermaine. Thanks to all of you for your feedback and for checking out this special Tuesday afternoon edition of Rewind to Raw. Wei will be back in 90 minutes for the wellness policy. This was him just getting warmed up. So be back here at 3 Eastern as you and Jordan Goodman will be chatting music with Big Tom.
That's right. Yeah. Neil Flanagan, unfortunately, a bit under the weather. So he will not be joining us. We wish him our best, but we will be Playing our favorite songs. This is our annual edition of our music episode on the Wellness Policy, where we turn off monetization on YouTube and just talk about maybe musical discoveries and experiences that we've all had. And obviously, we want to welcome and invite all of you guys who are listening. This is a free podcast at youtube.com/postwrestling. We'll be giving out a call-in link. Send us your links in the chat and let us know, and we'll be listening to some songs and talking about music.
And then on Wednesday, I will be back with Brandon Thurston. We'll be on at a special start time of noon Eastern on Wednesday. We're going to be chatting about a lot of different subjects, including Andrade's situation with AEW/WWE. And maybe adding some discussion to that was a post that was just made over the last 2 hours by one Samantha Irvin, who writes, 1 year down, 1 year left on my non-compete. She got a 2-year non-compete when she left WWE, folks. So,
you're kidding.
2 years. I mean, so like we know Renee had a 1 year. We know Andrade is, in theory, subjected to a 1 year, whether he negotiates something more favorable. But Samantha had 2 years on her non-compete. Wow. Something else. Yes, folks. So more on this on Wednesday. I'm sure we will be discussing the state of some of these independent contractors and what they are subjected to. I also want to give mention to the fact that I was a guest on the most recent edition of Between the Sheets with David Bixenspan. That is up on the Between the Sheets podcast feed. 3 hours discussing this year's Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame ballot, going through tons of different cases in all the different categories, who we're voting for, who we are not voting for. Looking at the criteria, what works, what doesn't work. Great discussion here with David Bixenspan. So you can check out that now, Between the Sheets. And that is all for us today. We're back many times this week. We hope all of you have a great rest of your Tuesday. And now we count down to game one, Friday night at the Rogers Center. And that's all Way. Official prediction for Friday, Way.
Chase loose.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Goodbye, everyone.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.